Welcome to today's episode of the Third and Forever Football Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Oz, joined as always by my co-host, Kevin Ulm. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm still a little sad, but I'm getting over it. How many stages are there in grief? I don't remember. Seven?
I don't know. Vikings fan stage of grief is different because like we reload.
Well, you guys
like,
have a cycle of grief. Yeah, There's no finite end to it.
It just goes over and over. So
I think there's seven, and I don't know what they are, but I'd say I'm at five. So I'm getting there.
All right, that's not too bad.
You know, the Pro Bowl helped. That was people watched that.
That was something. The Pro Bowl was a thing that occurred.
And one of the teams I heard won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some fucking around. The skill, I always like the skills challenge stuff is like kind of fun, but
dude, they fucked it up though. This I only watched the dodgeball one and part of the receiver one because I only care about Devontae. But like the dodgeball, they didn't even say who was on each side for each round. They had the whole thing in like a super wide camera, so you couldn't really see what was going on. And like the AFC just won, and I was like, okay, whatever. Like, they didn't even, like, take it seriously, like, from a broadcast
there was, I saw the catching one where, like, a quarterback was with one receiver and it's like a relay thing when they start one end. Like, there were some definite, like, I don't know. First of all, the NFC had Cordarrelle Patterson as a receiver.
Yeah,
like, that's how depleted
the
it was.
Fuck?
But also, the NFC, like, they kept making the NFC people have to keep re-throwing it. And it wasn't like enough, but the AFC, they didn't even give a fuck. It's like, cause I knew, if the NFC, won that one, dodgeball wouldn't have mattered. So I think you could clearly tell they're wanting it all to come down to dodgeball or something. And it was just like,
Goodell cooking the books.
Fucking stupid. But it was like, all right.
I just wish they'd put a little bit more effort into the broadcast of it because that's honestly more interesting than the actual goddamn game.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's tough because we have to deal, it was, you know, Monday Night Crew, the Booger Mobile, and Tessitore, and they had the whole weekend, so it's just like, oh, dear Lord. Like, oh, no, I thought I was done with you.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game. I watched the highlights, and I think I understood it was happening. They had a new rule in place, which I thought was fun.
Instead of onside kicks, if you score instead of an onside kick, you can take a 4th and 15 from, like, your 25 or whatever it was.
That's not far enough.
No, you know, I mean,
that's not far enough at all.
Yeah,
to make that like the same, it should be like a 4th and fucking 30. Like, onside kicks are so hard to do, whereas 15 yards, that's just one dude slipping. You know, that's not really. I don't know.
Yeah, but at the same time, 4th and 15 is. It's,
I also fear change, so that's part of it.
You just want to be fucked if you're down. You need the ball back and you don't have any timeouts. You just
Onside kicks are fun because onside kicks are one of the few things in sports where
they've changed it so much where you can't get ahead, like running starts anymore. So it's like it's
I understand. I'm not saying that we can never change it. I just really like the concept of an onside kick where it's like it's just so weird. It's so unlike anything else in football. It's just this complete departure that you can do whenever you want.
More than anyone would really be against onside kicks.
No, I'm against morons blocking for onside kicks. That is a very fine detail to my opinion about it. You're getting me all mad again, and I didn't want to get mad today.
Brandon Bostic.
Who is not even on the Jets practice squad anymore. Brandon, if you're out there, go away.
All right, so this is, as we said last week, this is our official Super Bowl preview where we're going to go fully in-depth, real in-depth about both these teams.
No segments, right?
No segments.
I forgot to ask that. Okay, thank God.
No segments. We would have we're going to... Performance of the week for the Pro Bowl?
I guess. I don't know.
So what I'm kind of mapping out here is thinking that we're going to just go each team, you know, the 49ers and the Chiefs, and go through their entire season, kind of just like talk about basically as an overview, how they got here, where they rank among the league, basically just how they got here. And then we'll go in the actual game, kind of matchups that we see. You know, obviously we know the Mahomes and the Kittle that's playing, probably arguably the top two guys, but we can, you know, talk about the other people that fall under them, you know, who has the edge type of deal. And then we're going to end with our actual prediction on who we think. Mm. So let's start by going through the Kansas City Chiefs season. So they went 12-4, obviously won their division. I mean, it wasn't really – for a little while, it looked like Oakland might kind of perk up a little bit. The Chargers became Oakland, a dumpster fire right away.
Oakland and, you know, I mean, at the start of the season, the Chargers were one of my, like, sneaky
– Yeah.
You know, this team is going to come out and surprise people because they had kind of a rough season last year too. And it's just the same thing. It's just – I'm sad for their fans,
yeah,
the Chargers. Like,
well,
I don't understand.
What, 10 of them? I mean, there's not many fans.
Well, yeah, like both fans are just getting a really rough go right now.
Yeah, so the division ended up shaping out with Kansas City 12-4, Denver 7-9, Oakland 7-9, and then the Chargers rounding out the bottom 5-11. What's interesting is the Denver was a shit show beginning of the year. They had them and Oakland went on the complete opposite trajectories as the season went on, thus equaling 7-9. I don't know. They're both new, you know, young teams.
Denver's got a first-year head coach. Actually, oh yeah, Oakland does too, kind of. You know, not Gruden's first rodeo, but this is his first year back with the Raiders.
Yeah, and so it's – well, no, he was there the year before, last year.
Was he?
Yeah. This is his second season there.
Wow.
And so it was very – I mean, they won like 5 games or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
So this year it looked like they were going, and then all of a sudden Derek Carr became Derek Carr. Josh Jacobs actually does look really good, but either way, this division was the Chiefs. I mean, wasn't really close after midway through the year. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at not having a first round bye, and then all of a sudden the Dolphins beating the Patriots, then they secure the second seed, and then of course obviously the Ravens losing the Titans, they get to host the AFC Championship game. I mean, this season ended up just turning out to being a huge redemption one where arguably they should have been in the Super Bowl, possibly won it last year, if not for a stupid penalty by a man who's currently on their opponent this week.
Yeah, D Ford. I'm still pretty mad at him about that. But, it's good to see, you know, that for Chiefs fans that last year wasn't an outlier. I'm not saying that I'm predicting it by any means, but it's entirely possible that, say, the Ravens next year come out and they just don't have it like they did this year.
Right.
And so, you know, when you kind of, you know, get spoiled in the playoffs and you get bounced before the Super Bowl after a really, you know, a record-breaking season, there's always that question of, you know, is this an anomaly or is this what we can expect? And it seems like the Chiefs have really solidified, you know, kind of their ascent at the same time as the Patriots' descent, where it's like, you know, the last Patriots Super Bowl was the one where they got bounced, and now I'm pretty sure it's going to be all Chiefs for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect example. I mean, the Chiefs, as we go through, they had, you know, averaged 28.2 points, which was good for fifth in the league, 379.2 yards, sixth in the league. 281.1 passing yards, fifth in the league, and then 98.1 rushing yards, 23rd in the league. So offensively, I mean, they're tops. I mean, that's the benefit of obviously having a guy like Andy Reid with his perfect style quarterback. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, it's the perfect marriage. And, I mean, yes, Mahomes, I mean, he wasn't as productive nearly as he was a year ago as MVP, or he threw 50 touchdowns, but that's, you know, him going 26-5 in over 4,000 yards in 14 games this year. That's pretty good. I mean, like, you know, it is what it is, but you can't really complain when your quarterback is, you know, has 87 touchdowns to 18 picks in, you know, two full seasons, and with the playoffs in there, I mean, that's pretty damn good.
With the playoffs in there, he's very young. He fits the system perfectly. And, I mean, something else we might cover as we kind of move through their season, but they had to, you know, kind of struggle through some adversity and bounce back. They didn't just roll over everybody this season like they kind of did last year.
Yeah.
And they did that. So that's a good sign for them, you know, in terms of mental toughness and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, their defense was a big, got a huge upgrade last year, or from last year, where they got the additions of, you know, Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, these guys, like, they went from, you know, basically their offense having to do that, where they had to put up a lot of points, and their defense would probably surrender, you know, close to 30 points a game. But this year, you know, they only gave up 19.2 points, which was seventh in the league. 349.6 total yards, 17th, but 221.4 passing yards a game, which is good for eighth overall. And then their rush defense was their weak spot, although it has had a massive increase since, I think, like week 10. So they're trending in the right direction. But, I mean, when you have that offense on the other side of it, that's obviously a Super Bowl winning chance of winning team right there. You don't need to have tops, obviously.
You don't need it, but it really helps. And that was the big dig on the Chiefs last year was, you know, I still remember the Rams-Chiefs game where it was just a track meet. No one stopped anybody. Touchdown, 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 touchdown. And a lot of their games, you know, I don't think any of them were quite that crazy. But last year, they couldn't stop much of anybody. And they made some good moves in the offseason to fix it. I know when I was watching their game last week, AFC Championship game, I mean, Mathieu is just...
He's incredible.
I was scared, and I knew that there's a whole TV in between me and him. Like, he wasn't getting out. I was still kind of scared. He was fun to watch.
You know, he is, I mean, he obviously got the nickname Honey Badger when he was at LSU. You know, he's only 5'9". And
What is a Honey 90. Badger? I'm too afraid to ask at this point, but I really don't know.
It's literally just...
Like, should I Google it right
now? Yeah, you can. Okay, it's an actual animal, and it's known for, like, eating,
really like honey?
Killing snakes. Like,
isn't that just like, I'm just seeing badgers. Like, is it different than a badger?
Yes. I think it's like a subspecies of a badger.
Oh, it's a sub badger.
Yeah.
Why does it like honey so much?
I don't know. I mean, it's
how aggressive is a honey badger, people also ask.
Extremely.
When startled, they rush at their assailants, releasing a potent scent from their anal glands. Oh, boy.
Yeah, they have, like, they're known for just having zero.
So they're like badger skunks.
Because they sprint at, you know, animals much larger than that. Like, it's insane. So that's why he always got, that's how he got that nickname. But, he's so fun to watch. What's interesting about this, so I actually saw this interesting stat, which I when I heard it, I could not believe this is true. But the Chiefs had not won a game with a quarterback that they drafted, like a starting quarterback that they had drafted 30 years since Mahomes did it in 2017.
And haven't all of the quarterbacks, is that where you're going with this?
So, no, as I'm saying, the last guy that did it was a guy named Todd Blackledge, who was last on December 27th, 1987, was the last one to do it. They've only had one that had an opportunity, Brody Croyle, but he went 0-10 as a starter. So
yeah, absolutely hate to see it.
That's insane. Like, because the Chiefs have, they were never in the business of a team that drafted quarterbacks, like starting ones. Like, so when they did it for Mahomes, I mean, it came as a massive shock.
Weren't all their quarterbacks drafted by the Niners too?
Well, they've had ones like that. So like, obviously, like, you know, like Alex Smith was the incumbent when Mahomes got there, but the Chiefs, they traded, you know, they went 12-4 or the year before, or the year of the 2017 draft, and they were fine. Like, you know, Alex Smith had a very good tenure in Kansas City. They could never get past the Patriots, of course, but they traded up to 10th with the Bills. They gave the Bills their first round pick, third round pick, and their first round pick the next year's draft. Just for that one, just to trade up, you know, 15 spots. And obviously, it's panned out. But it was a massive gamble because Mahomes, like, it's easy to have the revisionist history and be like, oh, yeah, I would have taken him in a heartbeat. You know, everyone rags on the Bears for doing that. It's like, okay.
But that is fun.
Mahomes was a project. We never knew, like, he had the massive talent, the potential. Like, he'd throw it, you know, 60 miles an hour, a country mile. But he had some, you know, it was against Big 12 defense.
He had a high ceiling, but a potentially low floor because he was unknown.
Yeah, he wasn't a guy that could come in and start right away. He benefited so much from sitting a year for 15 games. He started the last game of the year when it was meaningless for him, and they still won, but he sat for a full year in an offseason with, you know, Andy Reid and Alex Smith, which Alex Smith, say what you want about him, every single place he's gone, everyone says he's fantastic as, like, a mentor and in the quarterback room. Like, he's very, very...
He's a smart man.
Yeah, he loves... Like, I would not be surprised if, you know, when all said and done, he goes into coaching, because he loves it. And so it was a perfect system, obviously, to be in. But at the same time, you have to have the talent. I mean, obviously, no one really expected it, except for maybe Brett Veach, the GM of the Chiefs, and Andy Reid knew what they were getting. But, you know.
Know what they were even hoping to get. Right. I mean, it's always a question mark.
Yeah, quarterbacks are the hardest. I mean, they're impossible to. It's like the guys, the surefire ones could be busts. And even the ones that, like, you know, there's so many top ones. Like, Carson Palmer was a top pick. And he was he was fine. He had a couple of good, really good years, but nothing to write home about. Like, nothing crazy, you know. And they're such a crapshoot, and so many quarterbacks, so many amazing. Like, look at the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Majority of them are nowhere near being a top pick, and it just
yeah, like the MVP of the league this season, not even close.
Everyone
passed
on him. Every single team passed on him.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, you know, and everyone said, a lot of people were saying, you should be a receiver or a running back. It's like, you know, quarterbacks, it just depends on where they go and a little bit of luck, obviously, and it's just how they pan out. But so I don't rag on the Bears for that. I rag on the Bears for picking Trubisky over, like, Deshaun Watson, who had just...
I rag on them for not only doing that, but moving up and sacrificing draft capital to do so.
Just one spot, and John Lynch, the GM, the newly crowned GM for the Niners, traded down. He's like, okay, yeah, he made it seem like they were going to take a quarterback, but then he's like, nah, he took Solomon Thomas, who I don't even know where he is, but still, he got extra picks out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to go down as an all-time bad draft move, regardless.
If you whiff on a quarterback, it is franchise crippling. I mean, it sets you back so far. I mean, it's not a good look for anyone. So the Chiefs, they were a great team last year. You can make the argument for sure that they're a more complete team this year. I mean, they only added speed on their team. I mean, with the additions of Mecole Hardman and, you know, DeMarcus Robinson, and obviously Damian Williams becoming the top guy in the backfield now that the whole Kareem Hunt thing is behind them. But, I mean,
And that's the thing where it's like, I don't know. I don't really view Damian Williams as this huge asset. He's competent enough to keep it going, but they're an air raid, I think, pretty much through and through. And that's their strategy when they pick up these guys. Like, who the hell had Mecole Hardman on their radar as, you know, as a big threat this season? He's just fast. And that's the same thing with Hill. I mean, not to take away from any of their route running ability or just their general athleticism in other areas, but they're just so damn fast.
Yeah.
It's insane.
I mean, there was I'll save this for the end. I'll save it when we actually get in between the game. We go through, like, some X factors in it. But, I mean, yeah, so it was no surprise that the Chiefs were great this year. Or were going to be very competitive and one of the top powers in the AFC for sure, and had a strong chance to get in the Super Bowl. And jumping over to a team that definitely surprised people.
I was only slightly surprised. I'll point that out.
I'm saying, but going from, granted, they lost Jimmy Garoppolo after like week four or five last year, and they, you know, it showed that you lose your quarterback. But to go from, you know, because we played, I remember last year we played the Niners week one, Jimmy Garoppolo first full year there, and they had, you know, a lot of talk with Kyle Shanahan. And I remember watching that game. It was Kirk's first game as a Viking. We kicked the crap out of them. And I was like, you know, we beat the shit out of Jimmy Garoppolo. And I was like, all right. And obviously, you know, the season ended up going 8-7-1. Not great. But this is, I mean, what they were this year is it's 100%, 100% John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. I mean, this it was textbook.
They're so damn smart.
I mean, seriously, and you know, they go 13-3 in a loaded NFC West. You know, you can definitely make the argument. This year, probably the toughest. Yeah, I would say the toughest division in football. You know, with the Seahawks the way they were when they were supposed to have maybe a down year, and then the Rams obviously were a little bit of a disappointment, but they were still very competitive for 14 or so weeks. You know, had a bit of a Super Bowl hangover for sure, but it was a very difficult. And the Cardinals were competitive. You know, they're a new system, but they still kept it competitive, especially late in the year. So that's a tough, tough division. If the Bears didn't suck in our division or weren't as disappointing, and then if the Lions were in a dumpster fire, then I would say the North is the most difficult. But this year,
yeah, but it's just, I mean, they powered through. I firmly believe the 49ers would have been 16-0 if they were in the NFC East. You know, whichever team you want to take out of there, even if you like switched them with the Redskins, it's still, I mean, they have been a juggernaut all year that people saw coming. Just our margins of victory, we're talking, you know, 41-17, 31-3, 51-13. Like, they're just blowing people out of the water half the time. And it's not surprising, and I think you and I could both kind of relate to this on a personal level, where both of our teams went up against the Niners in the playoffs, and, you know, both of us were kind of like, yeah, we're probably not going to win.
Yeah.
And we didn't. Yeah. It wasn't even close.
Well, it's just you look at their team, and yes, they went out and got a couple guys. Obviously, they got Richard Sherman a few years ago when Seattle didn't want him or wasn't willing to pay him, and they were ready to move on. And then they, you know, got D Ford, obviously, but a lot of their guys they have, you know, the Nick Bosa, the Eric Armstead, the, you know, most of their defense. I mean, obviously Debo Samuel on offense, Raheem Mostert, Tevin Coleman.
Don't you say that name?
But all these guys, like a lot of them were people, either players that teams gave up on, or they moved on from, or they drafted them, and like it's
and that's a lot, like. I don't know. I don't want to sound like I don't want to get up on my soapbox completely here, but I think that there is a perennial sin with people that kind of look at and judge, you know, NFL franchises, where they place too much consideration on the pieces and not enough consideration on who's moving them around. And I'm not saying that players aren't important. I'm not saying that quarterbacks especially aren't incredibly important, but it feel like Andy Reid should be this huge factor in every equation. And now Shanahan has proven that he's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need, you know, a superstar running back, because you can get it done with Mostert, and you can make him look really good if you have a scheme that works.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's just Kyle Shanahan has just shown that. You know, I know a lot of people rag, like, we're going to obviously talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, and the biggest thing is everyone, you know, says, like, he threw eight passes.
Handsome.
Eight passes in an NFC Championship game. It's like, yeah, because that's all he had to do. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but, like, why in the world? Kyle Shanahan's like, why would we stop running? Like, we were going to keep running because it was working. Like, they couldn't stop it. And they didn't, obviously, and as you and I both know, that was the same thing back-to-back weeks. Our teams could not stop their run.
I mean, Mostert's no slouch, but
no,
it's a testament
no, but
to
he's
the
a,
overall
he's
system, the offensive line.
Yeah. I mean, he had 100 and over 150 yards before contact of his 220. I mean, that's insane. So, like, anyone can, like, obviously you have to be fast and find the holes, but I mean, he's not. That's light work.
I could have gotten at least one touchdown.
No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. With those holes, like I might have
gotten hurt like immediately.
Yeah,
but if I didn't, I could have gotten at least one touchdown.
Oh, if I think if we turned injuries off, if this were Madden, turned injuries off. I think you and,
oh, yeah.
you and I, with their
I could break a century
performance that it was, you and I could have definitely topped 100 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, just because, like, it was the whole – that mass.
Even if we tripped two-thirds into every run, we still would have gotten 100 yards.
Like, that's insane. I mean, it was a showcase in one of the trenches. Mm-hmm. But so let's go – the third year, averaged 29.9 points, second in the league only behind the Ravens, 381.1 total yards of offense, fourth in the league, 237 on the dot yard passing yards, which was 13th in the league, and 144.1 rushing yards, which was second again to the Ravens. Offensively it was a clinic, and a good reason why they scored so many points is because their defense, unlike the Chiefs, where it was a top 10 scoring defense, but other than that it was kind of middling. It was a bend don't break type of deal. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Niners defense this year, I mean, they gave up 19.84, so actually less, a little more, like point something more than the Chiefs did, but points per game, which is eighth in the league, 281.8 total yards of offense, which is second in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I believe only behind the Patriots, I think, ended up being number one.
Patriots and their fraud defense. Sorry, we got off topic.
169.2 passing yards allowed, first in the league by, I think, a fair amount. And then 112.6 rushing yards per game allowed, which was 17th. So, yes, you could say that's their weak spot. Like, they're pretty damn good. And because of their front four, was unbelievable all year. They didn't have to blitz.
That's a huge thing, and that's, I mean, we're probably going to talk about this more in depth later in the game, but that really opens up, you know, kind of the way that you can scheme the rest of your defense, the linebackers and the secondary. If you can get home with four guys,
yep,
it changes everything.
Yeah.
And with Bosa and I'm blanking on the other guy's name.
D-Ford, Eric Arms.
Oh, yeah, D-Ford, shit, yeah. So, yeah, with those guys up front, I mean, that's been a lot of the reason. They're just frustrating to watch because they just straight up beat you, and there's nothing you can, like, you know, it's something I especially noticed during the Vikings game, where it was like Cousins would get the ball and just get hit almost instantly. It makes it really hard to come back against them.
Yeah, I mean, also on the flip side, their offensive linemen are so damn good. They're all just better than you, and they're just going to beat you in the trenches. And so they're just controlling the ball and controlling all momentum. So, and when you come to offense, finally, you're going backwards, and your defense is getting more and more tired. I mean, they work so well together. Mm-hmm. And that's massive props to the front office, to John Lynch, and obviously Kyle Shanahan having, I'm sure, massive input on, you know, drafting guys that fit their scheme and fit their system that they want. And I mean, it's just, it allows, when you're able to get home with four rushing, you can have everyone else, you know, the other seven, be in a zone coverage. You don't have to have man-to-man matchups that can get exposed, where they all just work together. And obviously Richard Sherman, you can make an argument, one of the best zone corners like ever. Like, yes, everyone argues that he should be following the number ones, but that's not his play style. That's not how he plays.
That's not his play style. And I mean, should we get into specifics about the matchup now?
Yeah. So I feel, let's transition
bringing up that zone man coverage stuff.
Yeah. So we're going to go in, and obviously we know, you know, Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. And George Kittle is the best tight end in the NFL right now, And Travis Kelce is probably number two, but Those are the star. Obviously, you know those names. But let's go into other position groups and other names that could have a massive impact and swing this game. Because obviously defenses are going to be keyed on Kittle and Mahomes and Kelce. You know, they're going to be looking at shutting those guys down. But so that means that some people are going to have to do that or step up. So let's talk about the San Francisco zone defense that they kind of run and how they operate in that.
Yeah, and so San Francisco, like you said before, you know, they get pressure with the front four. They drop into, you know, a pretty decisive zone, and Richard Sherman, you know, plays very well within that system. The problem with that in this coming matchup is that Patrick Mahomes is really good against zone. He's much more effective and efficient against zone than he is against man coverage, and that was what I think the Lions and Colts ran against them with some success in the middle of the season. So they may, regardless, have, you know, some answers for that now that they maybe didn't in, you know, week 8 or whatever that was. But I think that would still be probably the go-to strategy to try and limit the high-powered Kansas City offense. And it's one that San Francisco is uniquely suited to not do. It's very interesting. I'm very curious how they end up going about that on the defensive side.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Mahomes, like, yeah, he is, you know, you can't just sit back in the zone because he will pick you apart. But also, I saw, it was literally, he was like his quarterback rating was like 115 or whatever against zone, and like 105 against man, or like just about 100. Like, he's gonna get you.
I think across a lot of games, but I think those specific games in the middle of the season, there was some struggles, and that also might have been him a product of him being hobbled and not 100%. Yeah, during those games, but
yeah, because I mean, he's currently having a playoff run that it's been like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's literally the top rated per PFF grading playoff run a quarterback's ever had. I mean, it's absurd. Like, he's just doing things that we aren't, I guess we're slowly getting accustomed to seeing and expecting of him, which is insane. But yeah, so I think with him, you have to limit the damage. You have to find ways to be like, all right, because of their speed on offense, because of their weapons, you're obviously going to want to take away Kelce and Hill. Those are going to be your top two guys that you're going to try to take away. Yeah. And then you just have to be like forcing, you know, a Sammy Watkins or a Mecole Hardman or a DeMarcus Robinson or a Damian Williams. Like, they're going to get those matchups where it may not be your top guys.
And a lot of this is going to come down to, you know, will Sammy Watkins catch footballs today?
Yeah, I mean,
is a big question mark.
He had a fantastic AFC Championship game. I mean,
But he also had a fantastic week 1, and then he did nothing the rest of the season.
Are you saying this because
very strange?
Did you have him on your fantasy team?
No, I didn't. I almost traded high for him, though. I'm glad I didn't. I almost pursued that, and that would have been a mistake.
All right. Yeah, and so I think it's just it's going to be difficult to kind of cover a man. Because that's just not the DNA of the Niners. Yes, they can run man, but it's just not what they do. They are best at zone. I'm kind of in the camp of being like, play your best strength, because they were damn good as a zone primary defense. I mean, I think they're just going to be more creative with their blitz packaging, because Mahomes doesn't take sacks. That's also one of the things, like a huge thing about his game. He's very rarely takes a sack. Like, he does everything in his power to not take them. And it's just, you know, you can say that's product of his offensive line, but also he's more athletic than people think. And a lot of the time, like, he's a little more elusive than people like to give him credit for, because he doesn't look like it when he runs.
He's got a little wiggle. Not like he's not Lamar Jackson, where he can just send people flying out of their shoes every time he takes off, but he's definitely, it reminds me kind of like young Aaron Rodgers, where he doesn't move that much, but he just gets guys to miss.
Yeah.
By just enough.
Yeah, he's bigger than people think, too, I think. He's a big guy.
Yeah, that 27-yard touchdown run during the AFC Championship game, he's just bouncing off people, and you know, I said it last week, I'll say it again. When quarterbacks don't just run out of bounds or slide, guys, like, their brains break for about 10 seconds. They just don't remember that they can hit him as hard as they want.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Speaking of Sherman, he's obviously going to have a fantastic day. The whole secondary of the Niners will. But the whole defense will have to have a fantastic day.
Yeah, they are going to have their hands. I think that's the more interesting side of the equation, is the Chiefs offense, Niners defense.
Yeah.
At least more prolific.
Absolutely. But the left tackle and the right tackle for the Chiefs, Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, respectively, are, in my opinion, the absolute biggest X factors that have the potential to swing this game. You can make the argument that the strength of the defense for the Niners is their edge rushing, with Bosa and D Ford. And then obviously Armstead kind of in the middle there, but you know, this is where it's huge because Mitchell Schwartz is probably having of the last 6 or 7 weeks, he's been the top graded, tackle in at the NFL, which is a great thing to have going into this game. Yeah. And obviously Eric Fisher, not so bad himself. So I'm going to be constantly watching them just to see the amount of pressures and happens there. Mitchell Schwartz actually is the only tackle in NFL that has not allowed a sack in the regular season or the first three rounds of the playoffs yet this year. My man Brian O'Neill, right tackle of the Vikings, was up there until I believe it might have been No, it wasn't the back game. He ended up getting through that because they credited it with someone else. I think they gave that to Klein. But either way, he gave one up for sure against the Niners. Like I said, you know, a couple weeks ago, this game's going to be won in the trenches, and I not as much as I said with the Vikings, but it's getting up there.
And that's something when I'm deciding, you know, this game, and we're going to get into legit predictions in a minute, but when I'm trying to pick which side I think is going to win this game, there's two factors, and each one goes a certain direction. I think there's the trenches, which goes decidedly towards the Niners.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's the skill positions, which goes decidedly towards the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you look at stuff like this, if they were playing a series of seven, I think that I could pretty reliably take the Niners with kind of that solid base of trench work and, you know, general talent.
Yeah.
But in a game of one, you have to put emphasis on the quarterback, and yeah. I just don't think that I trust Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay.
I mean, how do you feel about
it? So I don't know. I've been listening. So I don't want to get a little preachy, but I'm really, really getting sick and tired of there's been a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo slander these playoffs. A lot of this year. I know I've seen like a lot of memes, a lot of jokes, a lot of fun, you know, things like that because of how good the Niners are like elsewhere and how good, like, you know, how the scheme god that is Kyle Shanahan. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is 21-5 as the Niners quarterback
in
the playoffs. Like, I don't care about, like, he has 100 quarterback rating and even 100 as their quarterback. I don't know. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's not his fault. Like, he's going the plays that are getting called. Like, you know, both of our games. Yes, the Vikings. I will say, you know, we made them run the ball. Whereas, and we had a little bit of a push until the second half. But you know, we made him throw an interception. We were in his face. We sacked him a few times. He only needed to throw the ball, you know, against you guys. Every now and then, like, they hit you with a couple play actions where you weren't expecting it because everyone's playing so far up. But when you have a quarterback, it's like when you're the defense that you're facing cannot stop your run. Usually when a quarterback only throws it 8 times, they're usually winning the game.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not taking issue specifically when I say that I don't have, you know, a ton of trust in him. I want to clarify, you know, I'm looking at his stats now from this season, and he had, you know, 27 touchdowns, 13 picks. Not great, not terrible. 4,000, or just a shade under 4,000 yards. And he went 13-3. So, like, there's nothing really to scoff at there.
Yeah.
What I'm kind of referring to when I talk about that is that if Patrick Mahomes scores a touchdown and he's up 4 and there's 2 minutes left, do you trust Jimmy to get them down the field? And I don't. He can prove me wrong, and I mean, if he does here, then I will never make that mistake again.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel it, and I know that that's a terrible, you know, like that's not a very defensible position. But it's what I have, and I'm not a Niners expert. I haven't watched him all season. Maybe he has done that, and I just haven't been looking. But I don't view him. Whereas, if you turn that situation on its head and the Niners score to go up 4, 2 minutes left, I'm worried about how much time there is, because Mahomes is that electric, and that's one of the kind of axes that my pick rotates around.
All right, I mean, that's fair. Like, so my thought is, you know, that kind of, I had that question, you know, most of the year, but that kind of changed for me, you know, when it came down to when the Niners beat the Saints down in New Orleans, where mm-hmm. Jimmy Garoppolo dueled, you know, a 1-for-1 with a red hot Drew Brees at the time. You know, Drew Brees 29-of-40, 349 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 picks. Garoppolo, who at this point was looking, everyone's like, he's just a game manager. He's just a game, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But 26-of-35, 349, and 4 touchdowns, 1 pick. But, I mean, I guess you can make the argument that that last play, you know, what really ended it was Kittle going, you know,
going beast mode and just throwing people off.
But also,
them.
It's like, it wasn't like the Saints defense, while they were a laughingstock a few years ago and most of Drew Brees' tenure, they were for a while looking extremely strong down there, especially
at home. And that's a valid point.
And so I do share your worry, you know, if it's, you know, Mahomes, the thing is, like, Mahomes is going to put up points. I don't care what defense is against him. He's going to put up points. And I don't know how I would feel. I would definitely not pick Garoppolo over Mahomes, obviously.
Yeah.
Head-to-head, I mean, especially with the games on the line, like, eh.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of, you know, a misleading comparison, because no one is going to pick Garoppolo
but
over
also,
Mahomes.
At the same time, you know, you could say that about every single quarterback until they do it, until they obviously lead that, you know, that drive. So all it takes is for that to happen. I mean, because it just erases that kind of stigma, unless your name is Kirk Cousins, where you can do that, and then everyone still seems to forget about certain drives or things like that. But whatever,
Kirk couldn't beat the Chiefs on a final drive either. So
no, but also his defense couldn't stop allowing points to happen. But
hey, Matt Moore,
he put up
is
over
good.
He put up over like 30 points. So
the X Factor player I want to highlight is Matt Moore.
No, I want to highlight Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and everyone else on their fucking offense.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think Mecole Hardman's going to catch multiple touchdowns. I could be wrong, but I think that he is, because you can't double three guys. Two is the absolute maximum, which means that if he gets loose in the secondary, no one's going to catch him.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, I mean, defenses, they tip so much what they're doing, and that's why they're so successful because the Chiefs, they move Kelce all around the field. He's out wide. He's in tight. He's in the slot. He's all over the field, and it shows defenses, like, they cheat and they show their hand before the play, and it's easy to dissect. Like, that was like the one that brings to mind last week, or I should say 2 weeks ago, when they in the AFC Championship game, where they had Kelce up top by himself, and they had two guys. They had a safety and a corner on him. And you can clearly see, like, Tyreek Hill is in the slot with one guy pressing mm-hmm. him, and it was a 21-yard touchdown pass or 25-yard touchdown pass.
It's like when you see the safety in Madden cheating up, and you audible the guy on the outside to a fly route.
Yeah.
And if he beats him, you just huck it because you're going to score a touchdown.
Absolutely.
It's exactly that.
Yeah, and it's just like, that's what's interesting about with the Niners. They don't use Kittle that way. Kittle's a, what's insane about it. He's a far better blocker. I mean, not far better, but he's a better blocker.
Much more of a traditional tight end.
Absolutely,
than Kelce is.
Absolutely.
And
but he's still so versatile. Yeah, but he's always lined up in the tight end position. He's not. They rarely put him out wide unless it's like a, you know, near the goal line. But other than that, they're pretty standard with how they do it. Now, the guy that they do move around so much is Kyle Juszczyk, their fullback slash tight end slash slot receiver, you know, all over the place.
Keep saying slashes.
Slashes. He's everywhere. He does everything for him.
Your head coach, your owner, your power forward, yours truly, Jackie Moon.
Like, he's just, he does everything. And, you know, there's a reason they paid him, you know, almost $7 million. It's just because he's so versatile. And Kyle Shanahan, I mean, he sees a player like that of his potential and his ability. He's just like, oh man, like I want to have a lot of fun with this, and just puts him over. And I remember when they that's a thing though. That's a contract. You give almost $7 million to a fullback or a year. If it
doesn't work out,
you are all time dumb dumb. I mean, yeah. that's absurd, and it's just it's smart. Smart people get rewarded for smart moves all the time in the NFL. And the Niners might be the best example of a team that's benefiting from this, looking like they're geniuses because it's just work. Everything's working out. Granted, Jarrett McKinnon contract, terrible. Solomon Thomas pick, terrible. Like, they've had whiffs. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure. And but it's easy to kind of fall from grace in that respect, where everything was working with the Rams a year ago, and now look at them.
Yeah.
But for the time being, it looks like everything, you know, all the choices they made were the right ones. Shanahan's the guy, and I don't know. I think the Chiefs are set up for more long term success just because of the Mahomes Andy Reid dynamic. But absolutely, the Niners aren't far behind.
No,
they are probably. If you had to, like, I know no one was betting on the Niners, but if you had to, like, take bets from people halfway through this season after the trends had been established, I think that most people would have said these two teams, possibly the Ravens, but...
And the Saints were in there, too.
Ravens and the Saints would have been you know, on their heels, yeah. But these two definitely... no one's shocked by this.
No.
They're just both really well-run teams, very talented. And hopefully we should get a better Super Bowl this year than fucking last year when it was like 6-0 at halftime.
I'm going to go ahead and eliminate guarantee that we won't have a repeat of last year.
I really hope not, because that was so boring.
Yeah, no, I don't see that happening. So I definitely agree that, you know, obviously, you know, with every game, quarterback is the X factor, and that's why, like, I have it so hard. I can't do it. You know how I feel about Patrick Mahomes. I don't shy away from my admiration and love of that man. Like, I was all about it last year, and obviously this year, and I'm sticking with my pick for the that I had at the beginning when we did our playoff preview. My NFC team, both of our NFC teams were wrong. Yep. We both had the Saints.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Sorry. But actually, no, I will not apologize.
Thanks a lot, Kirk.
Kirk the God.
Kirk and Kyle.
Kirk and Kyle, baby. Yeah. all right, let's go to our picks, our predictions, actually. As we went to the X Factor. Actually, before we go, who would you say? I feel like it's safe to say that Mahomes and Kittle are the top two players in the Super Bowl. Am I wrong in saying that? Like, just overall.
On their respective teams, I'd say they're the most talented at their positions in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I can't think of any other Niners
I think for sure, like, in this game, I think those are the two best players in the Super Bowl based on.
I think Tyreek is also up there. I mean, Kelce is good. He's not better than Kittle. So, yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Yeah, but then I'm going through. I'm like, probably third best. Third and fourth, I probably would give that to maybe Tyreek and Kelce and Tyreek. I don't know how you want to do that. I don't know. Tyrann Mathieu's up there for me.
Matthew is up there. Richard Sherman's got to be up there.
Nick Bosa's up there.
Yeah.
The Mitchell Schwartz, the right tackle for the Chiefs, is up. I mean, so I don't know. Yeah. I mean, this is you look at both these teams. I mean, they're talented everywhere.
They're so talented, and I know that you're not a Bosa fan, but I mean, ignoring him, I really don't hate anyone. My feelings on Richard Sherman in the last couple of years have definitely cooled.
Yeah.
I don't really care anymore. And I'm just really looking forward to a Super Bowl that I have no horse in whatsoever. Because last year, cheering against the Patriots was fucking exhausting. Like it always is.
Inevitable.
But now the dynasty's dead, so I don't have to worry about that. Thank God.
Right. No, it's like... Yeah, I mean, I look at both these teams. Like, I love Andy Reid. I would love for him to get one. Oh, Kyle Shanahan, I believe, He'll get one. I mean, yeah, he's not going anywhere. Garoppolo already has like two rings or whatever. He's going for his third.
Yeah, he has two rings.
Granted, this is for his first starting one, but I mean, Mahomes is gonna get one. I don't know if it's Sunday or next year or the year after or whatever, but he will have one.
And so is your prediction then officially the
so,
Chiefs?
So my official Super Bowl 54 prediction is I am picking a final score of 34-27 with the Kansas City Chiefs hoisting the Lombardi Trophy and Andy Reid finally getting that vindication and the respect that he should be having all the time.
And no one's going to hoist Andy Reid because no one wants to die.
No.
Well, I'm a little annoyed at you, but I'm going to explain my eerily similar pick.
Oh boy.
So I'm also going Chiefs. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, I always tend to base it off of, I put a huge amount of value on the trenches battle on both sides. I think that the Niners win that on both sides, not by a landslide, but they still win both those battles. But I just think that Mahomes and the Kansas City offense is going to have an X factor that the Niners won't. So I'm going Chiefs, and with a final score of 34-28 in overtime.
Ooh!
Yep.
Same score as what is it, Super Bowl 51?
I don't remember.
Yeah, 51.
But it'll be 28-28. The Chiefs will win the toss, and they will go down and score a touchdown, and we will spend the entire offseason talking about the overtime rules, the NFL. Wouldn't it be fun? It'll be so fun.
I don't know what the problem is with everyone with overtime.
I don't like it.
I think overtime right now is great. I think it's great right now.
I don't like that a coin toss can determine the winner now
is fantastic.
I think that both teams should possess the ball no matter what is scored on the first drive, and then after that, sudden death. Fine.
I mean, just they still have to drive 75 yards. Like,
yeah, but like, you know, last year Chiefs Rams, whoever wins a coin toss wins. You know?
Chiefs Patriots.
No, like last year, like the Chiefs Rams game, the track meet.
Oh, we were at that.
You know, where it's like when you have two teams with these high powered offenses, I don't know. I mean, we probably shouldn't get into a full blown debate here, but that is my prediction, and that is where the drama will circulate and orbit around for the entire offseason. And they're gonna put in a rule like they did this last year that changes overtime, but then they won't enforce it, which will be even funnier because they'll just like end games, I guess. I don't even know. It's going to be great.
Oh, I guess then we'd have the Saints be able to chime in because the Vikings won the toss and we drove 75 yards and
yeah.
scored.
It's too perfect.
Although it was – the funny thing is happening. It's like literally Sean – but Sean Payton's like, no. Like he's like, I don't even want to talk. He was like, no, we lost. They were the better team today. Like and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Chill out.
I mean, that's less of a big deal because A, it was the correct call. You can argue about like the way the rules are set up,
yeah.
But they made the correct call, and you know, it's also you lost to an underdog at home. Nothing shady happened. Like, yeah. Okay, fine. Just like,
all right. That one. Yeah, we'll take that L and go on next year. Mm-hmm. All right. Wow. You actually do a very similar. Well, that's kind of a but. Well, now I'll either. I don't know. I guess we're not really that in. You'd have a huge vested interest, but minus my love for Mahomes and wanting Andy Reid to win so bad, but
so bad,
so bad. No, should we unveil our AFC team for next year? Should we wait?
No, we should wait until the recap show.
All right, we'll wait
until
then.
That'll be like a teaser.
All right,
you know that'll be like you know. Third and Forever will return.
Yeah.
In what is like at the end of Marvel movies.
All right. Yeah. So next week, yeah, we'll obviously be recapping what hopefully is a fantastic Super Bowl. I mean, everything on paper says it should be. Everything it says it should be. Please be that. We'll recap, obviously, Super Bowl 54, as well as go into kind of a little bit of an off-season preview for both of our teams. We'll obviously have a draft. episode, but and obviously any massive breaking news that happened, we'll talk about. But next week will be predominantly all about the Super Bowl, and then we will unveil our AFC six win and under team for next
Hell
year.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. As always, I have been your host, Adam Oz. Join us always with my co-host, Kevin Ulm. You've been listening to the Third and Forever Football Podcast, our Super Bowl preview for 54. Kevin, any final words?
Just score some fucking points, please.